is RebelNet Radio with your host, Joe Spilotro. Hey guys, it's Joe and I'm here by myself tonight. T and I were supposed to get to a podcast this weekend, but he got hung up with some other things and we kind of promised that we would get one going. So I think that's what I'll attempt to do. It's going to be a little bit weird doing it by myself, but it's not that big of a deal. It's just something that we kind of know a little bit about. Rebel basketball, mostly. We'll talk a little bit of football, too. And what we're going to start with, obviously, is UNLV's home opener, a tight affair against Cal Poly. UNLV won the game 74-72, a little bit closer than most people thought. Sportsbooks had it pretty tight. They had it at about a 7-point, UNLV a 7-point favorite. And if it was not for some poor free throw shooting, I think UNLV would have went over that mark. But nonetheless, they got the win. But what's most important was how did the Rebels play, who played well, what kind of philosophies were in play, what held true, what do they need to work on, and things of that nature. And I think the first thing that has to be talked about is obviously free throw shooting. I couldn't stand it. It was... would have been a really good game, I think, a real competitive game. But the whistles, oh my Lord, they were coming out left and right. And UNLV didn't have a huge advantage or disadvantage because of poor officiating. It was just how much the flow of the game was broken up by the number of fouls. I think the final tallies for the scoring or for free throw shooting was something like a total of 56 free throws, somewhere around there. And I think the teams combined for nearly 60 fouls, which obviously is going to slow down the pace just tremendously. And it just, there was just no really good flow to the game. It's difficult to watch. And UNLV's kind of lucky because there were some games that were a lot worse than that on that night and since then. But it's something that the players are going to have to learn to deal with until, you know, the referees decide to pull back on not really new rules, but I guess they're just going to be more enforced rules, which essentially look like, if you're watching the basketball game, is you cannot make any contact outside of the key. And just about anything was being whistled. And again, just led to a real choppy affair. UNLV was a beneficiary of a lot more free throws. Unfortunately, they didn't convert on a lot, and that was the main reason for the tight game. UNLV's inability to hit free throws down the stretch, it just gave Cal Poly a fighting chance at the end, even though UNLV was in control. It got a little bit hairy there. The game started off, UNLV didn't play necessarily well, and they found themselves pressing a little bit, and Cal Poly went into the half with the lead, which had to be a little bit concerning. I think fans were expecting a little bit more than that, but in contrast to what UNLV's done in the past couple years, UNLV came out in the second half, and they had a really strong defensive first 8 or 9 minutes of that second half, and Cal Poly just, they turned the ball over more than they did last year. And we have to remember, this Cal Poly team, though they might not be the most talented, they are a veteran team. They have the senior leadership. They have seniors that have won an NCAA tournament playing game, I believe. And so they know how to play together, and they didn't wilt when the Rebels put the pressure on them in the second half. They fought back and clawed their way back into the game to keep it relatively tight, and UNLV prevailed in the end. But in the second half, actually pretty much for the whole game, UNLV's defense was pretty good, I thought, especially for a first game. The pressure didn't really create a lot of turnovers early. It may have sped up the tempo a little bit, and I think that's more of the reason for the press, is maybe to speed the game up, make the other side a little bit more uncomfortable, maybe force a few quicker shots than what they'd like to take, grab a rebound and try to get out and run. It was more effective for UNLV in that second half. They looked pretty good with the pressure, forced a few turnovers, missed shots, corralled the rebounds, converted on the other end, and they took a nice lead, I believe about 11 points, if I'm not mistaken. And the Rebels just held on the rest of the way. They had the lead. I do believe Cal Poly tied the game late. UNLV hit some big shots, and it was short-lived, the tie, and UNLV, they came out with the win. That's an important thing. UNLV hasn't always been successful in these early games, and I don't know that anybody will consider this a great success, beating Cal Poly by just a couple. Although tonight, Cal Poly did go down to UCLA, and it's tough to use the transitive property with college basketball. But Cal Poly did give UCLA a game. I believe UCLA ended up winning by 7 points. Cal Poly, I believe Cal Poly had a lead, or the game was tied with 5 minutes left. So it wasn't all that unlike the UNLV game in terms of how the game flowed and, you know, the relative competitiveness of the contest. They're not a bad team. It's certainly not going to be one of those that gets two asterisks for a big win when you look at the resume for Selection Sunday, but certainly it's not going to be a poor loss. I do believe Cal Poly, just based on what I've seen between the UCLA game and against UNLV, they're going to be a team that competes in the Big West. I don't know a lot about the Big West, but I have a hard time believing that Cal Poly won't be one of the more competitive. I know they were picked in the middle of the pack, but I think they'll be in the top half of that league, and they'll have some say on who wins the Big West. So the Rebels put that one behind them, and that's all you can do. You win, you find what you did right, you find what you did wrong, and there was plenty of wrong, but not as much. I honestly thought that I'd come home a little bit way more disappointed than what I actually was with a 74-72 win. I figured if UNLV wins this by 2 points, it's going to be just more of the same. Here we go again. This is just the same old, same old. And I wasn't all that disappointed, a little bit, because I wanted to see UNLV put their foot across their throat when they got the double-digit lead in the second half and run it up to 20. But, you know, with veteran teams like Cal Poly, that's not always the case, and they know how to fight back. It wasn't that the Rebels did anything necessarily wrong, aside from missing too many free throws down the stretch. It's not like they panicked, or it's not like they started launching poor shots, or it's not like they got defensively lax. It's just that Cal Poly fought to stay alive and did whatever they had to do to stay in the game, and they took advantage of UNLV's missed free throws, and they'd hit some big shots just to crawl a little bit closer. And so there were some things I was really impressed with by UNLV. I think the biggest sore spot probably for UNLV, besides the free throw shooting, was the turnovers, which is something you do see early in the year. I believe UNLV had 19 turnovers on the night, which is too many for a game like this. It's not like Cal Poly was coming out with all-out pressure trying to make things. It was more carelessness on UNLV's part. Between that and the free throw shooting, I think those were the biggest Achilles heel for UNLV on the night. There was some bad shot selection for UNLV, but it wasn't like it's been in the past. It wasn't even close. Actually, I probably could count a couple Ike Nwamu three-point attempts, maybe a couple of three-point attempts by Jerome Seegers, and maybe one by Dwayne Morgan. So, you know, maybe between 5, 6, 7 ill-advised shots that should not have been taken. Other than that, I thought UNLV worked the ball really well in the half-court offense. They faced primarily a zone. There was a little bit of man-to-man, but it was mostly a zone, and UNLV worked the ball really well in the zone. In fact, a testament to, and it's the complete opposite of what we've seen happen in the past. UNLV only shot 14 three-pointers on the night. They only made three, so maybe it's a good thing that they didn't take too many of them. But typically against zones, what we see happen is ball being worked around the perimeter a little bit. Not too many touches on the inside. Ball just keeps moving around the perimeter, and the first guy with an open shot sort of takes it, whether it's open or not. And especially with a reduced shot clock, I kind of expected to see UNLV put up a few more three-pointers, but they stayed away from that, and I thought that showed a lot of discipline. They worked the ball inside a lot. There was some good interior passing. Actually, the Rebels shared the ball pretty well. There was none other than those shots I spoke of that were quick, ill-advised shots. I'd say that the Rebels were unselfish with the ball. They weren't. There was nobody out there looking to get their own or make things happen outside of the team concept. It was just it was pretty solid half court offense. And when you have two guys like, especially two bigs like Ben Carter, who played limited minutes due to foul trouble. Everybody pretty much had foul trouble. And Steven Zimmerman, you got two highly skilled, high IQ post guys that are going to should be real effective against the zone, because not only could they make the shot from the top of the from near the free throw line if they're uncovered, but they're going to make the right decision once the ball hits them in the hands, whether it's to put it on the floor, to dump it down low to the post, or to kick it back out. They just facilitate a nice flow on the offensive end. It's amazing how much better things can look when guys know what to do without it looking programmed, if that makes any sense. It's more like it's a natural feel, and they know how to pivot, find the right guy. And UNLV got some good buckets, and the ball movement overall was pretty good, and I expect it's going to need to get a lot better, because I think most teams, or I'd say the majority of teams, are going to go with a zone just based on some of the rule changes with all the foul trouble that's going to happen if these games keep being called as tightly as they are, with teams in general having difficulty with offense against a zone. I mean, that's something that's happened in college basketball for eons now. Teams not knowing how to dissect a zone. So, and with the reduced shot clock, I could see a lot of teams just going with the zone. So the Rebels are going to have to get used to it. They've seen a lot of it last year. I like what I saw in that regard for the first game. Defensively, I thought all night, aside from the press, which was a little bit hit or miss, it wasn't heavy pressure that forced a ton of turnovers, but it did speed some things up. And when there were certain combinations on the court, the press was more effective than others. But their half-court defense, much improved. Guards are still getting beat off the dribble a little too much. But, again, when the referees are calling everything, players are trying to adjust on the fly and may back off a little bit. And it makes for a little bit of a choppy game. But in general, I'd say, and overall, the Rebels defended pretty well. Certainly better than they have over the past couple years as a team. So there were some bright spots, even though it's a two-point win. I thought there were more bright spots than there were overall negatives. In fact, of the negatives that I did see, I didn't see anything. I wouldn't even say that. I would use the term correctable as if something was completely broken, but it didn't look like there was anything completely broken with the Rebels. It looked like the things they needed to work on, some of the interior passing, they just misconnected on a few plays. There was a little bit of miscommunication, but it was stuff that was off by microseconds and, you know, an inch here, an inch there. And it's plays you want them to make. They're good, smart basketball plays, but they just quite weren't there. And those are the things that tend to come together a lot better as the season progresses, as everybody gets used to the speed of the game, the way the officials are calling it, and each other on the floor. So they come out of there with the win. And you know, there were some great performances. There were some performances that weren't so good. And actually there were a couple of Jekyll and Hyde performances that pretty much told the story of why the Rebels were down in the first half and why they went on a nice run in the second half. Let's talk a little bit about some of the players and how they played in the opener. We've got to start off with the highly anticipated debut of a local favorite, freshman Steven Zimmerman. Made me happy to see UNLV on the first possession of the game. Worked a little bit against his own, and Steven Zimmerman got a open face-up 14-footer and swished it in for UNLV's first points of the season. I'm sure if there were any jitters for Big Zim, that they were gone right then and there. And he had overall, he had a nice, a quality D1 start in his first game. He ended up with, let's see what he had. He had 12 points and 9 rebounds. He also had 3 block shots. He only played 24 minutes, but he didn't look like a freshman out there. He was fully comfortable with the Division I game. I didn't get to talk to him, but I'm sure he would have said he was nervous and maybe felt a little bit off, but it didn't appear that way at all. He was fully up to speed, and you would have thought that he's a guy that's been playing D1 for a couple of years. And I love having him on the court. The guy could hit his free throws, and mainly he can make the right play. And that's important. UNLV's failed in that area with individual players in the past, a little bit too much one-on-one, and I'm going to make the play for myself, or I just don't have the vision or capability, or I don't want to get anybody else involved. And Zimmerman is the opposite of that. I think the more touches he gets, the better off UNLV is going to be. Like I said, because he'll make the right basketball play, which any time you're watching a half-court offense, it's always going to be screwed up, messed up by too much one-on-one, and I just think he's the type that will just keep things flowing nicely. It doesn't mean he's always going to make the perfect player or the right play. He's going to have his screw-ups like anybody else, but in general, he has the IQ. He has the size. He could shoot the ball. He's just a great addition to the Rebels, and I just look forward to seeing him continue. He's got some big games coming up after this week when UNLV, the whole team does, when they head down to Maui and take on UCLA in the first round. Then we have to talk. One of the keys to college basketball is always going to be the point guard play, and UNLV struggled in that area mightily, I'd say, since Rice has been here. Year one, there was Anthony Marshall, who played the point about as well as he was capable of playing the point. Not the perfect point guard, but he was tough. He was a winner. He defended. But in terms of floor vision and just overall flow, it just wasn't always there. But he was good. I'd take an Anthony Marshall on my team any day of the week. And, you know, the following year, I can't even remember who played point guard the following year. It was that, let's see. Our first year was Oscar Belfield. And Oscar was a solid point guard. Then we had Anthony Marshall, then DeVille Smith, DaQuan Cook, and Kendall Smith, which was just a mess. And last year, Cody Doolin didn't live up to what everybody had hoped he would be. He was a little bit too slow, not athletic enough, not quick enough for at least Mountain West play and beyond or above. And it just didn't quite work out. And now in Rice's fifth year, we got our fifth different starting point guard. That's tough because continuity from year to year, it's going to be defined pretty much by players staying together, but most importantly, a point guard that could grow through a system and not just, you know, shuffle in new guys every year. So, again, UNLV's got a new point guard, Jerome Seegers, and Seegers, he was one of those guys that had two separate halves. In the first half, Seegers, he wasn't horrible, but he wasn't what the Rebels needed him to be. As I mentioned, a couple of ill-advised long three-pointers, not within the flow of the offense. He did have 6 points in the first half, including a big bucket at just before time expired in the first half, but he only had one assist and two turnovers. After the half, heading into the second half, he played much better. He was more aggressive. He looked more natural out there, like he had a better feel for things. And he had 5 points, but he also had 4 assists with only one turnover. But I think the most important thing was he showed a little bit of his senior leadership. While UNLV was struggling from the free throw line down the stretch, Seegers did hit 3 of 4 within the last couple of minutes, including 2 free throws with 14 seconds left in the game that pretty much it made it a 2-possession game. And, you know, it gave UNLV the breathing room that they needed to hold on for that 2-point victory. Seegers, obviously, UNLV's putting a lot of stock in him this year. I pretty much think, for the most part, even though there's some capable players that could come in and fill in, I think, by and large, how Seegers goes is how UNLV is going to go on the year. So for a first game, you know, it was a little bit hit and miss, but like anybody else, even though he's a senior and he's a transfer and he's been here a year and he's had a year under his belt, I expect him to get better, a lot better, more quickly than you might expect another player to do. So we'll keep an eye on that. UNLV's got a couple of easy games this week against New Mexico Highlands and then Southern Utah University. UNLV should be taking care of business relatively easy in those games at the Thomas and Mack before they head out to Maui. So they got to use those games to their benefit. It's not a time to stuff all your stats. It's time to actually just get better as a team. Get used to the speed. How the refs are going to call it is going to be pretty huge. So we'll see. Seager is going to have to be good, though. If UNLV wants to make the NCAA tournament and have any success in it, I really think Seager's has got to be one of the better point guards, one of the top three or four point guards in the Mountain West Conference to do that. I think he has the capability, but so far it's kind of been mixed. Moving on, we have another transfer who joined the Rebels, another senior, another experienced guy, a tough guy. A guy that fans are expecting a lot from this year. In fact, I think a lot of people think that he's a candidate to be the leading scorer for the Rebels this year, and that's Ike Nwamu. Let's just say his first game in the Thomas and Mack Center didn't go quite as well as he had hoped, and I'm sure we're going to see better from him. Maybe, you know, nerves can affect anybody. They're still young guys, and maybe he was just bitten by that bug playing in front of a real crowd, or at least a real game in front of a crowd in Las Vegas. But Ike, he launched a couple of three-pointers that were reminiscent of, you know, some of the shots Curtis Terry used to put up. The difference was they almost hit our banners. If you guys haven't seen him shoot the ball yet, you want to talk about a rainmaker. I don't know that I've seen any Rebel. I thought Wink Adams had a high arc. Wink Adams is like a fastball compared to some of Ike Nwamu's three-pointers, but he was 0 for 4 from 3, and he was only 1 for 6 from the floor overall, and he really didn't make an imprint on the game in many ways. In fact, he also had 4 turnovers. He didn't have an assist. He did grab 4 rebounds, and he was one of the bright spots from the free throw line, hitting 5 of 6 free throws. He only got 19 minutes, and that's one thing you'll notice about the Rebels. Rice went with a lot of guys. We could say starter. We could say off the bench. It really doesn't matter. With as many combinations that were run and some very low minutes for starters, like Good Luck Ogunobo and Ike Nwamu both had 19 minutes. Starters typically don't get 19 minutes, but because of the depth of this team, and it's not just, you know, fluff type of depth, it's, you know, the guys coming off the bench are very capable starters. You wouldn't bat an eye if somebody like Derek Jones or Ben Carter or Dwayne Morgan were in the starting lineup. You'd say, okay, that's fine. I don't have much of a problem with that. It's a good starter. So the Rebels, I mean, they really do run with like 8 starters. So the minutes, I expect to see them spread all throughout the year between, you know, 8-9 guys. There's going to be a lot of minutes. That's why starting really isn't quite as big of a deal for this squad. But back to Nwamu, he was pretty much invisible. He had some aggressive plays, but again, it wasn't anything that you know, nothing. It overall was a poor game, and I'm sure he'll bounce back. But, you know, talking about aggressive plays, one player that he got the start in place of Patrick McCaw. Patrick McCaw was late for a practice, so Rice elected to let him think about it on the bench, and I think that's a good message. I think when you have players that are capable off the bench, it's easier to send messages like this than something like last year, where you just don't have the depth to where you could, you know, put any real heavy meaning behind punishment, or actually levy a punishment sometimes. But Jordan Cornish, he got the start in place of McCaw. And I'll tell you what, Cornish, he looks different, which is good. Not that he was really good as a freshman as a shooter, but that's pretty much all he was a shooter. He was really good at it. But still, he was only a shooter. We got to see Cornish put the ball on the floor a lot more. He slimmed down a little bit, dropped some weight, so he's a little bit quicker. His ball handling has improved. But what had me most excited is that he was willing to put the ball on the floor and take it to the hoop. It's something we just didn't see happen last year. And ironically, his specialty is shooting three-pointers. He didn't hit one. He was 0 for 2. And he only ended up with 4 points on the night, I believe, but he did have 4 assists and 4 rebounds, so, you know, it's kind of well-rounded. He fit within the flow of the game also, and there was, you know, no problem with him. And another important stat, even though the Rebels overall were terrible with turnovers. Jordan only had one, and he handled the ball a lot more than he has in the past. And, you know, you'll take a 4-1 assist to turnover ratio from your two-man or three-man, whatever you want to call it, any day of the week. So Jordan, you know, he got his minutes. He did what he was supposed to do, and he looked just he looks different. And I think for most of the freshmen that have turned into sophomores now, there's been some significant growth in a good way. And we'll talk about one of those players in a little bit. In fact, we'll talk about him now. Dwayne Morgan, he came off the bench, and I think you know, Dwayne's a good kid. I like Dwayne a lot, and I saw his struggle last year probably a little bit more closely than a lot of people. We all saw it on the court. He played way too fast, way too free, and he just frequently looked lost out there on offense and on defense. And, you know, he had a great game against San Diego here at home last season. But in all, it was just not – I don't think it was the season he envisioned, the coaches envisioned, the fans envisioned. And it was just a really tough freshman campaign for him. And I think most of it was, to be honest, I think most of it was trying to be a prototypical three instead of embracing what his strengths, what he does best, and what would help the team the most. And in fact, the two coincide. What he does best is what the Rebels actually need. They need some toughness. They need some rebounding. They need a guy that can defend a couple positions, a guy who could score on the inside. Not necessarily, you know, he's just a mediocre best outside shooter when I'm talking from like a, you know, 18 to beyond the 3-point line. He's mediocre. You don't mind if he takes an open one now and again, but Dwayne typically would get in the game, and as soon as he touched the ball, he'd fire one up. Well, we didn't see that. We saw an aggressive Dwayne. Now, he wasn't strong from the floor. He was only 3-9, but that's not, it's not that he didn't make all of his baskets, but where those attempts, all but one, were acceptable shots. And that's big for Dwayne, because he was about 50-50 with what was an acceptable shot and what wasn't last season. I only counted the 1 3-pointer. It was wide open, but it really didn't come in the flow, even though it was wide open. But other than that, he battled on the inside. He was playing around the post. He grabbed 6 rebounds in the game, and he only committed 1 personal foul. Now, again, Dwayne got in a lot of foul trouble real quickly last year. He had 17 minutes, you know, 6 rebounds in 17 minutes. I think the Rebels will take that any day of the week. He could tack on a few more and buy himself a few more minutes. I think if Dwayne does those types of things, he's going to find himself with more minutes than if he plays like the Dwayne of last year. This was the Dwayne we want to see. It looks like he was confident. He was intense. He defended well. He was good in the press. Like I said, he rebounded. He didn't make the most of his chances on the inside, but they hounded him pretty good, and he just couldn't get some to drop. But they were plays in the paint, and you live with those. That's just what happens. So Dwayne was one of those that just he needs to keep on doing what he's currently doing and not revert back to what he used to do. Now, another freshman that became a sophomore, got the start, was Good Luck Okonobo. And, you know, I just, you almost didn't realize Good Luck was on the floor in the first game with Calipari. He just, I don't know, it was a rough outing, even though he didn't do a lot. I mean, anytime you have a guy that size in the middle, there's two things you expect him to do, especially since he's such a prolific shot blocker, and that's defend the paint, defend the rim, get some block shots, alter some shots, and you got to grab some rebounds. He ended up with 0 block shots. I don't know that Good Luck's ever ended up with 0 block shots, probably since he's been in eighth grade. Now, granted, there was a lot of outside shooting by the smaller Cal Poly squad, but still, it was just he wasn't quite as active as we've seen him in the past. He wasn't aggressive when he did get touches down low. He went up a little soft, a little bit hesitant, I'd say, more than soft. When he should go up and make a play at the rim, he'd hesitate and pump or get the ball slapped away or get fouled. And him getting fouled, that's not something you want. He's not a guy you want at the free throw line. He did hit 2 of 4 at the free throw line. But overall, you know, it wasn't Good Luck's best game, and he didn't really stand out in any way. He ended up with 4 points and 3 rebounds. He did have an assist. So, you know, he's going to need a lot more out of him, especially protecting the rim, because Zimmerman and Carter, Zimmerman's a good defender, but it's not like he's an elite shot blocker like Okonobo is. I think Okonobo has some free reign when he's on the floor because, you know, last year Chris Wood and Good Luck both would try to block a shot, and it would leave wide open, crashing to the rim, and UNLV gave up a lot of offensive rebounds. I don't think Steven's going to go for every block shot. Ben Carter's not going to go for every block shot. I think Good Luck can go for every block shot, so I think he needs to be more aggressive in that, and I think we'll see better from him. And it's just one of those things. Hopefully we'll get a better feel for it when UNLV plays bigger squads that aren't, you know, four guards, things of that nature, or teams that have a big that is actually a threat in the post, because I want to see what Good Luck, you know, how much he's actually grown. So far, he looks pretty similar to last year, and they're going to need more from him. Now, one guy, going to be a fan favorite for as long as he's here. How can he not? He has the most incredible dunks all over YouTube, and I'm going to be honest with you. Before Derrick Jones set foot on UNLV's campus, I don't want to say I was skeptical, but I was just worried that he was just a jumper, just a leaper, a freak athlete that could do these aerobatics and just dunk, because his dunks are absolutely spectacular. But he's a basketball player. He's got a good feel for the game, and you could see he's just very early scratching the surface of what he can do. He checked into the game, and it's a good way to start his career. Within a couple minutes of him stepping in the game, UNLV ran, I think it was a set play, I believe, and against the zone. The zone was up a little bit high, and Pat McCaw caught his eye and tossed up an alley-oop, and Derrick Jones' first points of the year. It was apropos that he got him on an alley-oop dunk, a pretty spectacular one. But, you know, Jones didn't stop there. He had another acrobatic. It didn't end up as an and-one because he missed the free throw, but he ended up 4 for 4 from the floor. And, you know, he only got 16 minutes of play, but when you could put up 8 points in 16 minutes, not miss a shot, he had a couple of rebounds. If people were expecting, you know, J.R. Ryder type of numbers from a freshman, he's got a lot of room for growth. He's not close to there yet, but he does really have a good feel for the game. He's so athletic and long, and he's a pesky defender, and you could put him at multiple positions. He gives UNLV a lot of versatility, and I thought he had a real nice game. Now one guy that didn't get a lot of minutes, and his numbers were just kind of, you know. You're just like, you look at the stat sheet, he was okay. 5.6 rebounds. And let's see, 15 minutes. We're talking about Ben Carter, another Gorman product. Played with Zimmerman at Gorman for a year. And Ben was limited because of foul trouble. UNLV has that luxury of shuffling players in and out of the game. And not having to worry so much about foul trouble. I mean, injuries are going to be the thing that UNLV wants to avoid. Foul trouble, I think they could deal with a lot easier. But in Ben's 15 minutes, it wasn't the points. It wasn't the rebounds. It was the IQ. It was just smart basketball that made the half-court offense flow. I mean, there's no better way I could put it than there's some actual flow to the offense. I mean, there was... You know, you'd see some sets where things were a little bit stale, but in general, against that zone, they moved the ball pretty well. And Ben was a big part of that. In fact, it's, you know, such limited minutes. In the 15 minutes he played, Ben Carter ended up, when you look at the plus-minus, plus 9, which led the team. So when he was in the game, good things were happening, whether it was all directly because of Ben or if it was a byproduct of, you know, Ben tipping a ball out or just he just he's another guy. He's not similar to Zimmerman. He's similar in terms of mindset and his understanding of the game, his IQ, where he's supposed to be, where other people are supposed to be, and what he's supposed to do and when he's supposed to do it. So, you know, I could see Carter, he could be the type, especially with good luck's free throw woes. He's the type of guy you might see finish out. He might not start all year. In fact, I doubt he will unless there's an injury. But he's the guy you might see finishing the tight games because you the two things you need down the stretch of tight games and things that we haven't seen are execution and free throw shooting. Well, we didn't see the free throw shooting the other night, but you know, with Ben on the floor, I think the opportunity for proper execution goes really high, especially when Zimmerman's in at the same time as him. So it was good to see Ben finally get back. You know, he's battled the injuries. It seems like, you know, he might need a body cast at some point, but he came out of the game, as far as I know, unscathed and feeling okay. So he's going to be the biggest glue guy on the team. I think a lot of him. Again, his athleticism isn't going to blow you away or anything like that, but he's the type of guy that it seems that a Colorado State has every year, and they seem to kill us. He's one of those guys. He can be a pain. One you really don't expect to beat you, but you look down and you say, and you look at the important plays, and it seems like Ben is the one that's involved. Now we're going to talk about another freshman turned sophomore. Thank God UNLV had some returnees on this squad. I think it's why you're going to see a difference in the product on the floor and the success, overall success on the season. It's Pat McCaw. I've been critical of Pat early. I haven't seen the type of basketball that he's capable of based on the reports from the USC scrimmage that was the closed scrimmage, the secret scrimmage, through the exhibition game and the Scarlet and Gray game. I just thought Pat looked very lackadaisical, and he kind of always looks that way. He's got a stoic look on his face, and he doesn't always show a lot of emotion. And sometimes it looks like he's going through the motions when he's really not. But I've been a little not overly worried about him, but I've been a little bit worried because it's a stretch that I haven't seen Pat have, and it's been there, and I was concerned through the first half too. You know, Pat is our top returning scorer from last year, and in the first half he was, I don't want to say he was non-existent because he was distributing the ball. He had four assists and he looked good on that end, but you know, he had three turnovers, and he only took one shot. And, you know, this is a guy that showed as a freshman that he could score. He's not going to go for 30 a game or anything like that. He's not Rashad Vaughn. I don't think the Rebels need him to be Rashad Vaughn, but they do need him to score. And, you know, after the first half, I was scratching my head going, what is going on with Pat? He just doesn't look right. Well, Pat was huge in the second half for UNLV. He ended up with a game-high 15 points, but he scored 12 in the second half, and he hit four or six shots, including two or three, and they're back-to-back three-pointers when UNLV made their run early in the second half to take the lead, a nice little lead, and it kind of propelled them to be able to withstand any charge that the Mustangs had. And Pat was – he ended up with a strong game. You know, so I expect him to pop back into the starting lineup. I hope it was a wake-up call for him. You know, the being late and all that. I don't think Rice needs to tolerate any of that with this kind of depth. I think he needs to set the tone. Hopefully the message got across to Pat, and, you know, he does everything he's supposed to do off the court. And if he does that, I'm sure that he'll come around and do everything that he's supposed to be on the court. So, you know, in all, it was, like I said earlier, I can't be overly disappointed with the game. A lot of new pieces. I know I say that every year, but there are a lot of new pieces, and they're coming together. And this year, in a way, it's going to be easier because there's more talent. But in another way, it's going to take a little bit of time, and which the Rebels don't have a lot of, to get all these guys together on the same page. There's going to be so many different lineups on the floor. I don't know how many different lineups there were in last game. I mean, it easily more different combinations than we've seen out of a Rice team. So these guys, they got to get used to each other and a little bit more, and they've just got to learn each other's strengths, weaknesses, and just be able to read each other a little bit. So I think we'll see better things soon. And so now we head into a new week with a couple of games at the Thomas and Mack. UNLV first will play Monday night against New Mexico Highlands, another team from Las Vegas. It's just a different Las Vegas, I believe. I think that's where they're from. Anyway, obviously, UNLV should run away with this one. They should have their way with Highlands. It shouldn't be too much of a contest, but I think UNLV, because the Maui tournament is right around the corner, it starts a week from tomorrow. UNLV's got to get in all the work they can get because that tournament is loaded and their first round opponent is UCLA. So I think that this is just a time to, you know, for the team to come together and just start tightening up some of those nuts and bolts and just really get a good feel for as much as anything, the way the games are going to be officiated, because that's had an impact on college basketball overall, probably a little bit worse in the Mountain West, which isn't surprising because, I don't know, for some reason, even though the refs call different leagues, and anytime it's in the Mountain West, it seems like there's just terrible games. I can't stand Mountain West officiated games as it is. But everybody has to adjust to it. Some teams are going to adjust more quickly than others. What UNLV has going in its favor is such extreme depth. Not only could they wear the opponents out, but you're able to absorb a little bit of foul trouble, and you're able to keep throwing players in there and keep them fresh, and you don't have to worry quite as much with the fouls. So I don't want to call it a practice week, because there's another team out there. They're trying to win a ball game, and they're going to try to make life difficult for you. I don't think they will, but UNLV can't. They can't just look at them as, let's just dispose of these guys real quick and move on to Maui. They really got to make a concerted effort to get better quickly. One of UNLV's, I'd say, one of their weak spots over the past few years is sometimes they don't get up for games, and you cannot do that. The Mountain West Conference, when Mountain West Conference rolls around, I think the freshmen got a rude awakening last year, how difficult some of those games can be. It doesn't matter that there's not a number in front of the team's name. It doesn't matter that it's in some podunk town in front of, 5,000 people. Mountain West is tough. The play, the travel, it's just always been that way since it was formed in 2000. So the Rebels, it's one of the things that we need to see if they improve upon is, can they get up for teams that are clearly not as good as them, or they have to get up for every game. It's, they cannot lack the focus. This is a season long thing. You got to be focused each and every game. You can't just pick and choose or circle the games that are on ESPN or CBS Sports or something like that. You need to attack every game as if it's an NCAA tournament game. You got to go out there and I think they have to use these next two games, Monday and Friday, and get better, because it gets real quick once they hit the island. UCLA, Indiana, Vanderbilt, Wake Forest. It's Kansas. How can I leave out Kansas? That's a team I hope UNLV plays on the second day. That would mean a win against UCLA, and of course, Kansas will have no problem disposing of Dantley Walker's team, Chaminade, the host team. So they've got to use the week. They got to get better. They got to get better quickly. There's really no time. I mean, the schedule Rice schedules tough. There's no doubt about it. Nobody else in the Mountain West will schedule like him. He does it for a reason. I think it helps attract recruits, but the intent there is to make teams battle-tested and ready for conference play. The rigors that I was speaking of, the travel, the environments that they'll be in. And, you know, they just I'll be disappointed if we don't see some really good basketball, some good offense. I'm hoping it's not all zone. I'd like to see what these guys could do with man-to-man. We didn't see it on many occasions in the first game. So we'll see. It's. I wouldn't call it necessarily a big week. I mean, the Rebels are going to snatch two wins with ease, and they're going to head into Maui feeling okay, being 3-0. But I look for the finer details. I look for whether a team's coming together, how the chemistry is. Look for substitution patterns, what groupings of players work the best on the floor. And with this team, that's going to be difficult to assess because there is a lot of quality. So I'm going to cut this short. Actually, I'm talking too much. I'm sick of my own voice already. So, football, last night UNLV lost kind of a shootout at Colorado State. It was a tough one because they lost Decker once again. It looked like it was going to be one of those games that the last team that has the ball is going to win the game, and Decker went down, and UNLV didn't, they didn't match Colorado State score for score, and the UNLV defense, they just looked absolutely exhausted. Colorado State was gaining such big chunks of yards on the ground, and UNLV, it just didn't look like they were going to stop him at any point all night long, and I think it's just a tired team. I think it's a team that Sanchez is pretty much milked everything he could out of them, and they're doing all they can. I don't know how much more Sanchez could get out of them. There's only two games left. UNLV's next game is at home against San Diego State Saturday night, which is going to be a tough one, of course. And then, hopefully if they don't get a win there, they finish out against a weak Wyoming squad up in Laramie, and hopefully they can end the season on a high note and get that win. But, overall, I'm still impressed. There's been some downs and some disappointing things, understandable, but still disappointing things with the football team this year. But overall, I've been absolutely tickled with the progress that's been made. I just think we need to get some better players in here. You need this new attitude sort of to completely sink in and set with the program, and so they have good footing heading into next year. I don't know whether we'll see Decker back or not. He looks like he took a pretty good shot, but, it seems like he takes a pretty good shot every quarter that he's in the game. And it's just it's been tough on UNLV having to use both quarterbacks, and Palandek's getting some good experience right now. He'll be needed next year in either a starter role, or if UNLV brings in one of these JUCO kids, maybe a backup role. But he's getting some much-needed experience, so... I still think the future looks bright. It was a good move on UNLV's part. At this point, there's, for UNLV's resources and things of that nature, I don't know that UNLV could have done a much better job than getting Sanchez. And it's going to be nice to watch a program actually develop instead of stagnate. So it's too early to offer congratulations, and usually you don't offer congratulations with a sub-500 season, but I have a feeling we're going to be doing that this year. All right, with that, I'm going to wrap it up, and hopefully T will get off his lazy butt and find the time to do this. His promises. I had to stand up for him and get this done because he made a promise that it would get done this week, but we'll see. Who knows what's keeping him? But anyway, guys, hopefully, I'm not going to make any promises, but I certainly expect that we'll be doing this again next week for you. With two more Rebel games, two more Rebel wins, I should say, and then we'll look a little bit more closely at the big tournament, the biggest tournament, preseason tournament that it looks like we got this year across the nation. It's a loaded field. It's going to be exciting. Hopefully everybody will be eating turkey with a big old smile on their face, but until next week, we'll see you.
Hey.